services. And then a companion case after that, Junius Purnell Bartlett versus City of Newport News, Department of Human Services. Since we have attorneys for both Ms. Rudolph and Mr. Bartlett prepared to argue each of those cases, let's go forward with Ms. Rudolph's case first. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Clara Swanson. I represent Arete Rudolph and did during all the proceedings in juvenile court.
All right. Well, it's nice to have you before the court, Ms. Swanson. Just a reminder for everyone, now that we've moved into this part of the docket, each side has 15 minutes to argue, and you as appellant's counsel may reserve a portion. Now I'm looking for appellee's counsel. Do we not have? Okay. All right. And you'll be arguing this case as well, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. You may come to counsel's table when you're ready. While she's coming up, what portion of your time as appellant's counsel would you like to reserve for rebuttal? Each side has 15 minutes.
I'm sorry.
Each side has 15 minutes to argue, so that's what I was just saying, that you have a portion of your time. Appellant's counsel has a portion of the 15 minutes for rebuttal.
I'll reserve 3 minutes.
All right. You have 3 minutes. And are you counsel for Mr. Bartlett? Or
yes.
Okay. All right. So what I propose to do, since the cases are separate, although the same assignment of error, is unless you all have reached an agreement of how you would like to do this, if you have, please say so. If not, you have 15 minutes, you reserve 3, then you have 15 minutes, and we'll come back to you for, you'll have 12, and we'll come back to you for your rebuttal of 3, and then we'll move to Mr. Bartlett's case, although it appears we'll be arguing the same assignment of error.
That's correct, Your Honor. My client is the mother of 2 children, and I did represent her at all stages in the juvenile and circuit court. It's my client's position that the court did not have active jurisdiction. We contend that there was subject matter jurisdiction, but because numerous motions, petitions were signed by a non-lawyer, it is our position that those petitions were a nullity and cannot be corrected. And then just focusing on during the pendency of this case, there was an amendment which addressed this particular issue of non-attorneys signing.
You're talking about an amendment to the statute?
An amendment to the statute, yes.
It became effective July 1st of 2016.
That's correct. And in that statute, rather than stating that prior orders were valid, it stated that this statute and its change would not invalidate any orders that were previously entered. And it's my client's position that the court was without active jurisdiction, and therefore all of the orders.
Why isn't that statement, though? It's in the Acts of Assembly, that nothing in this bill shall be construed to invalidate prior filings or petitions by local departments of social services or by their employees on behalf of the local department prior to July 1st, 2016. Why isn't that a very clear indication by the General Assembly that when they amended the statute, they did not want to, that they saw that as they are confirming what the law is, not changing the law, and that even if there were a change, they were specifically saying they did not want to invalidate petitions that had been signed by non-lawyers, as has been the case for quite some time in Virginia, right?
It's my client's position that the orders that had previously been entered were invalid, and the wording of this statute did not validate those orders.
So are you saying that the statute, that part of the statute is unconstitutional? Well, why can't the General Assembly do that if they choose to do so?
My client and I are reading the statute differently in that that it is not specifically validating orders that had previously been entered. It is merely saying that it is not going to invalidate orders that were previously entered. And so it's my client's position that the orders were invalid because they were signed by non-attorneys.
I understand that's the argument, but I'm trying to understand, given what the General Assembly said, how you get there, as well as an opinion from the Attorney General of Virginia from 1988 that seems to go the opposite way, pretty clearly goes the opposite way of what you're arguing. And the General Assembly is presumed to know and understand any opinions by the Attorney General just as it's presumed to know the opinions of courts. So if the General Assembly did nothing to invalidate the Attorney General's opinion and then essentially negate it, and then put in language in the Acts of Assembly when it amended the statute this year that it didn't invalidate previous petitions, how else could the General Assembly make its intent better known than that?
It appears to me that they could have instead said that any orders previously entered are valid when signed by a non-attorney. And the language seems to be opposite from that.
Do you have any further argument?
No, I do not.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, you have your rebuttal time. I think I should stick with what I said. I know I'm sure you, as counsel for Mr. Bartlett, want to argue this as well. Why don't I allow counsel for the city Department of Human Services to argue the point, and then we'll come back to you if you have rebuttal, but also we'll then come to you to argue for your client. Is that acceptable?
That's acceptable.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
May it please the Court. My name is Pamela Bates, and I am counsel for Newport News Department of Human Services. Your Honors, this case is about whether the court jurisdiction can be taken away or divested from the juvenile domestic court because petitions weren't signed. And our position is that the petition that was in, again, counsel, the appellant, is applying the Virginia Code 8.012-271. Our position is that that section of the code absolutely is not absolute, and that there's exceptions to that 8.01-271. And the exceptions are child welfare cases. And this is a child welfare case. And the child welfare cases are governed under sections, as the court knows, 16.1-260. And under 16.1-260, a child welfare case, and in this case, an abuse and neglect case, is initiated by an intake officer. And that was done in this case. It was initiated, the petitions were filed, the juvenile domestic court accepted jurisdiction. Not only did they accept a jurisdiction, they acted on the jurisdiction. And also, as the court mentioned, that The procedure used in this case has been used for years. And again, in 1988, there's an AG, Attorney General's opinion, which stated, that opined that form petitions, as in this case, form petitions were filed. Form petitions approved by the Supreme Court were filed. The AG, Attorney General, opined that form petitions can be filed, setting out factual, alleging facts. In this case, form petitions alleging facts were filed. This has been done for years. Actually, there was a case, a court of appeals case. It's an unpublished case, and it's not directly related to signing of pleadings, but it demonstrates that this has been going on for years. In 2008, in Clayton versus Alexandra versus Alexandra Department of Social Services, in that case, the trial court held that it was a TPR, termination of parental rights case. In that case, an intern signed and filed a petition for termination of parental rights, and it was authorized by her supervisor. And the court upheld that. Counsel for the mother or the parent raised that, well, intern could not sign the and file the petition. And the court held that an intern could sign and file these petitions. So this has been going on for years. And again, our position is that what governs this is not 16.1-260 as well as 63.2-1505, 1505.4, which gives the agency the authority to receive abuse and neglect cases, and also, if deemed necessary, to petition the court for services, for further services, even to remove the child. So again, our position is that, and again, the recent amendment, not only it clarified the law. It clarified the law, and that petitions, form petitions, could be filed by workers, social workers, for the Department of Social Services. And, Your Honor, again, the trial court has broad discretion. And the trial court in this case held that these petitions were valid. The trial court looked at what was in the child's best interest. And that's the standard here, is what's in the child's best interest. And surely it would not be in the child's best interest for the court to invalidate petitions, years of petitions, that's been filed by the Department of Social Services across the Commonwealth. Thousands of adoptions, adoptions across the Commonwealth will be in jeopardy if the court found that these petitions were invalid. And so we ask that
counsel,
the court...
Excuse me. So basically, you explained to us what the ramifications would be should we find in favor of the appellant, and certainly you cited the applicable cases and issues regarding the foster care and termination of parental rights. But I think that Judge Beal stated earlier from Virginia Code Section 54.13900 in reference to how this has been somewhat, the General Assembly has taken care of this one issue or closed the door on it. Is that where you ultimately rest your case on that?
Yes, Your Honor. Section? Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And again, we ask that the court, this court, uphold the trial court's decision in this case.
There were amendments to the statute in 2008 as well, about 20 years, I guess, actually, mm-hmm. after the Attorney General's opinion, mm-hmm. which seemed to validate the Attorney General's opinion as well, didn't they?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe if you're referring to the case that dealt with child support, where there was an amendment in the code which allowed for the non-attorneys to sign and file petition. And again, that was just a clarification of the statute. The issue came, there was an issue that had come up. And so the court, the General Assembly at the time, you know, clarified that statute. There was not an issue pertaining to the abuse and neglect case. And when there was an issue, then the General Assembly found that it, again, had to clarify the statute, and which it did.
In 2016.
In 2016.
And then also added the portion and, that essentially indicated that it was reflective of existing law because it was not designed to invalidate anything beforehand.
Correct, Your Honor.
Do you have any further argument?
No further argument,
right.
Ms. Young.
Thank you, Ms. Bates.
Thank
we
you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Ms. Swanson, I promised you some rebuttal time if you'd like to rebut them. All right.
No, sir.
All right. Well, then we will move to Junius Purnell Bartlett versus City of Newport News Department of Human Services. And Mr. Webb.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, Nathaniel Webb for Mr. Bartlett. The court's, I guess, very much aware of what the issues in this case are. And the city, in my opinion, is overstating the consequences of a court ruling in favor of my client. In this case, if the court rules in favor of my client, clearly it affects my client's case, but the statute is remedial to things that were not appealed and were not under consideration. I think the General Assembly was aware of this case and others like it coming through the system at the time they met and made the modifications. But the issue that we're citing is that under the state of the law when the petitions were filed, it's our opinion that the petition should have been filed and signed by a licensed attorney practicing law. In the last 30 years that I've been here to observe it, I've noticed that more and more things that once were considered the realm of lawyers have now been passed over to where non-lawyers are doing title examinations and non-lawyers are conducting real estate closings and non-lawyers are doing so many of the other things that lawyers used to do. This is another case in that line because non-lawyers now are signing legal pleadings that are being filed with the court that have legal consequences.
But the General Assembly is aware of that.
I understand that.
And General Assembly not only amended this particular statute this year to make it effective July 1st, but then a portion of what they did was that was in the Acts of Assembly said, and I'll just ask you the question that I asked your colleague, that nothing in this bill shall be construed to invalidate prior filings or petitions by local departments of social services or by their employees on behalf of the local department prior to July 1st, 2016. So what...
At our opinion, at the point where the legislature made that change, we were already arguing before both the juvenile court and the circuit court that the court was without authority, that the petitions were void ab initio from the beginning. And it's my opinion and my argument that coming in after the fact and changing the law in the middle of the case while the case is proceeding and going on and having a retroactive effect that it, and rather than invalidate, their argument of the city is that it validates what they were doing all along. The city's argument that, oh, we've been doing this for years, I don't think that's a valid legal argument. There are many, many things that...
But if the General Assembly then says what it does, why doesn't that allow the city, whether it was right or not before, to be within the law now?
Well, again, I'm asking the court to adopt our position that I guess changing the rules in the middle of the game, which is what our position is, and what they did, does that then validate the improper jurisdiction that the court was exercising prior to the rule change? And the rule change didn't go into effect until July, and this case was argued and litigated well before that.
But
and at the point where we noted the appeal, the new changes hadn't gone into effect.
Do you agree with Ms. Swanson that there is subject matter jurisdiction?
There is subject matter jurisdiction. The question is whether there's active jurisdiction of this case.
If it's active jurisdiction, don't we have a lot of Supreme Court precedent that says you don't have a question of anything being void ab initio when you have subject matter jurisdiction? I mean, when you do have subject matter jurisdiction, and the question is whether you have active jurisdiction, isn't it a question then of being voidable as opposed to void ab initio? And that's a pretty big difference.
That's such a big difference. But again, Your Honor, the impression that my client has is that this is, you know, basically changing the rules in the middle of the game. You know, now they're, you know, now the other team gets four strikes instead of three. And that's where this seems to sit on our side of the table. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Appreciate your argument. Appreciate the argument of Ms. Swanson. Ms. Bates, would you have time to argue in response and for the city in this case as well?
Well, Your Honor, the argument would be the same as the first argument, that in this case that the petitions on the statute allowed for the workers to file the petitions. The petitions are valid petitions. Court did have not only subject matter jurisdiction, they had active jurisdiction, and the court looked at what was in the best interest of the child, and we ask that the court uphold the trial court's decision.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Bates.
Thank you.
And do you wish you have rebuttal time if you wish to use it?
Nothing further.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We will greet counsel, and then the next case.